You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is episode 48. I'm going to continue to pound into your head to please follow us on social media, because we are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and pretty soon we are going to be on TikTok. Today marks a first. Today we're going to be talking to an officer that worked in the prison, but it's not Utah. This is a former officer from the Florida Department of Corrections, actually the reception center, which is not too far from Orlando. The person that we're going to be talking to is a gentleman by the name of Cisco Perez. He was actually in my living room last Halloween, and I was spanking him with a paddle. He had shown up as a male stripper dressed as a police officer on a noise complaint for my last Halloween party. That's how I got to meet Cisco Perez. And I'm glad that I did, because this gentleman is very interesting. He's going to talk about his time at the Florida Department of Corrections, why he left, the other adventures he's had in life, and this new business that he has started that's available to people in the Central Florida area. So without further ado, let's have a conversation with Cisco Perez, from corrections officer to Butler Plus. You are an interesting individual.
Well, thank you.
And we have something in common. Now, it's interesting how we met. My last Halloween party, you were the entertainment.
That is correct. I believe there was also another entertainer there as well. That's what I've been doing for the last 8 to 10 years of my life, entertaining.
Do you enjoy that?
I do. I really do. When I got into it, it was a little bit scary at first, you know, because it was the first time ever being on stage in front of hundreds of women. But after some time, that starts to kind of, you know, leave. And then the maturity on being on stage and your presence just starts to come out a little bit more confidently. Watching women over the years just smile, laugh, being able to get out of their regular routine was just the highlight of my career.
Have you ever done any acting, Cisco?
I've done a few jobs here and there. Yes, okay. I was part of Bad Moms Christmas. Didn't have any kind of talking roles. However, if anybody happens to watch it or go back to watch it, it's the scene where the Santas come out on stage on top of the bar. Mina Kunis and some of the girls, they're making it a girls' night out. They wanted to do something wild and different because of the holiday season. They saw that they were hosting at this bar a Santa contest. On stage, on top of the bar, was Justin Hartley and 8 other Santas, and I was number one in that scene.
Cool. I want to come back to that. I want to actually go back, because a lot of my podcast talks about corrections and my history, and I do a lot of interviews with different people that have worked in the field. Mm-hmm. I have never interviewed a corrections officer on a state level outside of Utah until today, and now I'm talking to you. You worked for the state of Florida.
Yes, I did.
And so you had started in 2005.
Correct.
What made you want to work in corrections? Is it something you ever saw yourself doing? Or how did you get to that point? What was that whole process?
Yeah, well, it started out, I was actually in junior college in Long Island, New York, Nassau Community College. And I started to bounce around different career options, wasn't too sure. Then I landed in criminal justice. My playing days of junior football, because that's the only reason why I was over in Long Island, was to join the football team. When I came back to Florida and to continue on criminal justice, that's when I had interest. And it so happened that my best friend at the moment, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, man, they're hiring corrections officers. Do you want to apply?" And I'm like, "What do I got to do?" And we went through the process. Unfortunately, my buddy did not get the job because he failed to disclose that he had a previous record. It was something very stupid, you know, trespassing that was never lifted. But again, when you are applying for a position in the county or in the state, any legal position, you must state everything as much as you can possibly remember. So he didn't get hired. I got hired on, went through the academy, and that's how I started with corrections.
How long was the background investigation for you back in 2005?
Oh, man, it took, I think, about 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
They were in demand back then. So they were just pumping in officers into the academy. They were offering a payroll while you're going through the academy. So you're getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, just like a normal officer. And then once you obviously graduate the police academy and you pass the state exam, then you elevate into a higher pay bracket. But that's pretty much it there. About three months.
Did you enjoy the academy?
I did. I had fun. I'm all about, you know, team playing and teamwork. I was a collegiate player myself. So being able to run along other cadets and teammates, you know, it really brought back a lot of, you know, school time playing.
I just like
the competitiveness. Yeah, the camaraderie and the competitiveness within the academy, because there's, you know, the shooting range, there's running, there's drills.
There's lots of prisons in Florida. Where did you end up working?
So the prison I was stationed at is called Central Florida Reception Center. Now, this is a transit facility, meaning once the inmate is prosecuted and given a sentence, this is where they come before they go to their permanent residence.
Okay. Is this where they end up doing like a classification to see where a person ends up, is best suited to be housed permanently?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I seen them all come in, you know, from lifers to just guys for minor offenses, but they're still convicted of a crime for a couple of years, and then they go and they get transferred out.
Now, I've spoken with a few inmates here in Florida, and they've told me about the reception center.
Really?
And they tell me that the buses come in and you get off the buses, and they do not fuck around there at that place where you worked.
Absolutely not. I mean, they run it almost like paramilitary style. You have lines on the sidewalk. That's the direction of the inmates. Whenever an inmate is walking, they have to be on that line. There's an open yard. Everybody is being obviously babysat from the moment they leave the cell to the rec yard, to chow, to transit. Nobody's left alone.
Do you remember how many inmates are housed at this particular facility?
Yeah, there's actually 3 compounds within this facility.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was pretty massive. We had anywhere between 1,100 to 1,800 at a time.
Oh my God. And those are all going to get processed, classified, and then farmed out to different facilities throughout the state.
Yeah, and we had the jits, the teenagers rolling in. So we had them all. I think the youngest I've seen that came in was about 11 or 12 years old.
And so this is somebody that's certified as an adult and then sent to prison?
Yeah, he served the sentence as an adult. Yep. It's really cool setup because within that compound, they have a separate compound just to segregate, obviously, the teenagers to the adults. So that way they don't mix them. They have their own set times for chow, when they go to medic, when they have visits. They are running that compound pretty secure.
Did you work with a lot of these juveniles?
I did, man. The last 2 years of my service there, I got to work directly with the JITs. We call it the JIT dorm.
Okay, so these jits, these minors, these guys obviously have been certified as adults. They've done some major crimes to get certified. What was their attitudes like? I mean, did they act like kids, or were they?
Oh man, yeah, they were so immature. I mean, you can tell the older the older ones that are close to age, so like hitting 20 or so, they were a little bit more mature in their actions. But then when you have the younger ones, the 13, 15 year olds, they try to walk around with their chest all puffed. You know, these are kids that are just coming from a very difficult upbringing and they don't know any better.
Wow. This whole facility that you worked at, did you work, I mean, all throughout all the different positions? Because were you on days or nights or both? Or I don't know how the rotation works with Florida.
Yeah, we ran three shifts, morning, afternoon, midday, and then the midnight shift. And that's when I took part was after my, once I got certified, they assigned me to midnight shift. And I've gotten to work around the compound just to secure throughout the night. And man, let me tell you, that is rough.
Now, what do you mean? Why is it rough? Can you define that?
It's rough because you're working, you're trying to adjust to that schedule, midnight to 8 in the morning. Uh-huh. And here you are with no communication other than what you hear from the radio, especially when you call in just to secure at specific times. And that's pretty much all the communication you have. Other than that, you're roving around in this beat up car around the compound, just securing the fence, making sure there's no holes, nobody trying to escape or somebody trying to enter. If you see anything, that's when you call it in. You're pretty much a guard dog outside of the compound perimeter. And then what other positions? Then I had the yard, which is I'm responsible for releasing each housing unit for chow or for medical. And it has to be done in a timely manner because you're feeding X amount of inmates and chow is open for X amount of time before food services has to clean and get ready for lunch. It's a quick, all right, get these inmates lined up, send them out, let's go. They're very careful on the amount of inmates that they let out at a time.
Of course.
It's not everybody all out at the same time.
Cisco, do they go get their meal and do they bring it back to the housing unit to eat it?
No, there's a chow hall and it's run just like paramilitary. These guys are like dick to butt in line, no talking. This is not social hour. This is not where you can go and sit with your buddy. It's just like a process. When they get transferred in, it's a process. When they get food, it's a process. Get your food, eat, sit down, eat. You're done with it. If you're not, okay, get up, wait outside in line while there's two or three other officers making sure these inmates are lined up and they are lined as military.
Wow.
So you have, rows of inmates just lined up, ready to go, heading back to the dorm.
So movement from these facilities, like how long would a lunch or breakfast period be where all these people, you said 1,100, 1,800, how fast do all these people have to eat their meal?
Well, the kids are eating first to get them up early and out of the way. We were housing somewhere along the lines, anywhere between 60 to 85, 90 tops of juveniles.
Okay.
So that was a quick transition. We line them up and send them to chow early. The earliest I think it was about 5 a.m. Once they clear the yard, they have to be in their own compound before we release any other dorm for the adults, because it was not permitted whatsoever to commingle. Even if you have the JIT dorm all the way on the north side, and then you have the south side, you have the adults, that fence, as soon as they cross over, needs to be locked and secured before we release any adults. Yeah, it was a quick transition. It was no messing around. A lot of pressure put on the officer to making sure everything runs smoothly. Any hiccup, everything has to be, put on hold just to make sure. Wow. And everything was transmitted through radio.
So if I'm an inmate there, just a regular inmate, not a juvenile, I go in to eat. How long do I have to consume my food before I got to get back?
We were giving them no longer than, I would say, 7 to 10 minutes.
Oh, shit.
This is not,
Wow.
We were running them like it's a process, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God. Wow.
We have inmates serving inmates. They're preparing the food in the first thing in the morning. So these inmates, they're in this conveyor belt scenario, moving through the line. All right, let's go. Get your tray, get your food, sit down. Let's go move. We kept it to a very minimum amount of volume when it came to talking, to pretty much no talking at all. We will remove an inmate. I've even removed an inmate just for talking while we're eating at chow.
Wow. You ran a tight ship. In Utah, we would just end up bringing all the trays. We had tray carts and all the meals would go to the unit. And they would be served on in the housing unit. They went away from the big halls where everybody eats. They went away from that a long time ago.
I think, honestly, that is like the safest route a facility can be run, in my opinion. Having an open chow like that becomes very risky because you only have, you know, maybe if officers call out, now you're short staff and you got inmates in there that are, you know, God knows what they've done. And you have to be on a swivel constantly. So it's a very serious role.
How many people on average, and again, not the juveniles, but on average, how many people are eating in that chow hall at a time?
I would say anywhere between 25 to 40.
Okay.
Is what we were permitted to have at one time.
Gotcha. Of all the different places you worked, what was your favorite and your least favorite?
My least favorite, I would have to say, was I got to work in a medical. I got to do hospital trips where there would be an inmate at a local hospital having treatment or had treatment and needs to stay there. And we would be on rotation. That was like one of my best because there we were able to go and have our lunch down at the cafeteria during with the hospital staff, took care of us. We just sat there pretty much majority of the time watching TV. There are usually two officers, one inside and one outdoor. And then the one inside is really not much you can do other than read and watch TV because the inmate is obviously chained to the bed. And then the officer outside, you know, he's on patrol. He reports anything. Everything is being logged. So I would say that would be my favorite. My least favorite had to been the open bay. That is the most terrifying job experience I've ever put my own self in. Because these guys are not locked up in a cell. They are in a base setting, bunks on top of each other. They're free to roam. And it's occasionally they would just get up and in the middle of the night. So you have to be, again, while you're walking, doing your counts, you're the only officer in there. You know, you just got to make sure you don't have any enemies.
Okay. So you get into some type of argument with an inmate and it's 2 a.m. How long are you going to have to deal with that until your backup's there? What is the response time to help you?
They were really quick to respond to backup an officer. That I got to say. However, if you're the only officer in that facility in a bay, whether if it's open or closed bay, you are not permitted to leave the officer station. You can have a conversation or the inmate can be very combative, not being very, I would say, resilient to your demands and your orders. You would still have to wait for that other officer to come to relieve you so that way you can exit and have that conversation or have it out with that inmate.
Help me to understand, and for the people listening to this podcast, when you say open bay, is like your desk or you're sitting in this room full of...
In that facility, they had an open bay and the officer station would be enclosed. Okay. So brick, really thick glass. There will be a tray where, you know, if you need to pass something to an MA or whatnot, but you're usually set up with 2 to 3 officers. Again, if an officer happens to call out, now the sergeant on staff has to make appropriate changes to the schedule and reassigning the officer to another bay if needed. So it's also based off of severity of how many inmates are in these bays, because if there isn't enough, because again, we're transferring these inmates constantly, daily. If they see that an officer can handle a certain amount, they'll leave that officer there. And, you know, they'll reassign another officer to another bay, depending on, obviously, you know, different case.
one of the biggest discussions out in Utah, and Cisco, you can tell me, it mm-hmm. seems like corrections is going more and more in the direction of direct supervision. This term where you have the officer in the section or in the bay, if it's a dorm setting, with the mm-hmm. inmates, and it's just a desk or a platform where the inmate has direct contact with you. And I've seen these settings. It's kind of unnerving for a lot of people, and it's not helping with recruitment.
That is some scary shit. You got to have some balls. And here I am, you know, in a correctional facility housed with criminals. You don't know.
Felons.
You just don't know what their crime was. You don't really want to know majority of the time, because that's just going to mess with you mentally. Mm-hmm. So you have to really keep your eyes and ears open. There are no weapons on any officers in any of these compounds. I'm sure over in Utah as well.
Right.
A lot of
pepper spray and cuffs.
Yeah. And that's it, you know, and a huge flashlight, in, you know, during the evening times when you're doing count. But that's really about it. I mean, old walkie talkies that are about the size of right. a flashlight. That's your defense.
In the time period you were there, how often was an inmate on staff assault?
Very rare. Very rare.
Okay. Inmates, that's good.
You know, they, even though you need to have your head on a swivel is what you're always taught in the academy. Mm-hmm. You never want to drop your guard, no matter where you're at in the compound, no matter if the doors are secured, always keep your eyes and ears open.
Before we actually did today's recording, you had told me about an assault that you particularly remember when you first started working. Could you tell our listeners that story?
I remember my first one, even in the academy, they bring you onto the compound just to kind of get your feet wet a little bit. And it was about a week of going to the actual compound for the academy. And just to see how it was, there was an incident where literally my first day, and there was a report of a brutal fight between the inmates and the officer, blood all over. That was quite a sight to see. It was kind of scary. You know, these are things that you have to be ready to accept when you're taking this role.
Sure. How does Florida handle the security threat group, which is the gang stuff? Because I know in Utah, you had like Norteños, Serranos. MS-13 had not really started to come into Utah. Now you read about it all the time in the news. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's a big time issue in Utah, just like every other place. How does Florida handle? Because I know you've got a lot of Latino community here. So you're going to have all the different Latino based gangs. And how does Florida handle that? With you being at the reception center, I'm sure you had to deal with that.
Yeah, right. Every tattoo on that inmate's body is being photographed and documented. And that really helps determine where is this person is affiliated with. Mm-hmm. So based on the tattoo, that will give them a clear indication, okay, he's a gang member of this. And they do their best in the transit to put them in different locations so they're not overly populated.
Yeah. Do you have issues with rivalries and fights between gangs?
When I was there, that wasn't an issue at all. I remember another story when I literally, when I completed the academy and I got stationed, my first shift, I was literally relocated to the compound across the yard just because the original compound I was supposed to be stationed at, apparently there was some type of hit out for me just because of my skin color. Some Latin gang thought maybe I was a gang member. The word got around, and for the officer safety, you know, it is their duty, the administration's duty, and to relocate that officer just to make sure things calm down. And I was sent back after about a week and a half or so, ready to go back into work my shift.
Wait a minute, you were only outside of that unit for a week?
Yeah, they just wanted to make sure there was no other commotions, any talks about it. And once they felt like the threat was very low, they went ahead and reassigned me back onto the compound.
How do you feel about that? Or how did you feel about that at the time?
At the time, I was young and dumb, and I was like, man, this is fucking cool as shit. This is the coolest job ever.
As you look back now, if this had happened today, what would you have said?
Yeah, I think I could have made a better decision.
that's very unnerving.
Yeah, it was a really interesting compound. I mean, it was broken up into three large compounds to segregate different criminals based off of offenses and illnesses. So if an inmate, somebody who got prosecuted and it turns out that they have some type of long-term disease, whether if it's AIDS, hepatitis, we had a segregated compound separate from all the other population just for them. And we will send them right over there. And that's where they would majority of them stay.
But is that separate from the infirmary?
Very different. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Based on whatever their illness is, yeah. So it can
and
be
now
treated.
That is a whole nother level of the heightness of scaredness, because now you're this officer and you're around in a population full of inmates that God knows what they have. AIDS, hepatitis, laryngitis, sure. You know, these are infectious disease. And if something happens, now you have to make sure that none of that has gone on you or you haven't been infected.
I remember when I went through the Corrections Academy, that was a big thing that they emphasized, and they almost scared you straight, because you go down there and it's like, there are every fucking disease and you're going to get this. And if you don't wear gloves, you're going to get exposed to this. A needle's going to stab you. You're going to get HIV. You're going to get hepatitis, A, B, C, D, and everything else. If you don't do this, they scare the shit out of you. So that, I think when you first start working at a facility, at least with me, you're so paranoid to make sure that you always have gloves, never do a cell search, never pat somebody down. When I was a police officer in 1996, I had to do a search on a guy that was drunk at a McDonald's. And I learned very quickly about the importance of gloves, because when I patted this guy down, he had wet himself. He pissed himself. And I was not wearing gloves. And so I learned very quick the importance of gloves.
Putting gloves. But you see, nowadays, you still see that happening. There's officers out there that'll do pat downs without gloves.
Well, you know, I see it too with veteran staff, and then they get on the computer that's shared by other staff, and you're like, come on, man. And when we were talking about this interview, you had told me that you worked in Escape while working there. Please tell me about that.
Man, that was freaking cool, man. So that was the highlight of another highlight of my career. So I was actually off shift. I was at home, and I got the call from the warden. He was like, how soon can you be here in the compound? We have an escape and we need all hands on deck. I'll be there as soon as I can. We got dressed, put on my gear, headed out. Then we all gathered in whoever was called into shift at that moment. The inmates actually escaped through the trash transition. Really cool. And it was bad on the officer's part, because the officer was supposed to probe the trash. We had this really long probe rod that and the thing was, is that all right, when they're collecting trash, they're collecting trash in this cage like bin, right? It's a see-through, obviously, so you can see all the trash is collected, all the bags are clear. But they was able to get this inmate inside there, had all the trash piled right on top of them. Officer at the exiting gate in the back of the compound failed to do his job, didn't probe the trash, let the inmates wheel the rest of the trash out. And that's where the inmate got out, went through the woods, ended up, I would say, I think within that month, they found him in Merritt Island, if I can remember, somewhere out by Coco. And his parents, his mom's house.
Of course. What, did the mom know that he had escaped and had aided him?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, there was at one point we heard it was he got picked up somewhere along the lines of State Road 520. So obviously there was some kind of collaboration, some plot that he, construed, and they picked him up and took him back to home.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But my role was, they assigned me a shotgun. It was partnered up with another officer. He had a revolver. They gave us a company vehicle and they gave us our map. And this is where we had to pretty much secure and check. I mean, we stopped at gas stations. We stopped at restaurants. Whatever was in our range of what was given to us, we pretty much checked up and down.
I bet your adrenaline was flying as you're looking for
this. Oh, it was. Until I got to about 8 to 10 hours in. I think I worked a double that day. I was like, just keep me on. Just keep me on.
Holy you know, shit.
Just in case I found him or one of the officers found him, then everybody can just like go and rush. And it was pretty cool, man. They also housed, which was really awesome to see, was the housing for the canine. They used, that was really cool to see. They had the hound dogs. You can hear them off to the distance, you know, occasionally when you're working shift on the compound, you know, very well-trained sniffing dogs. You cannot outrun or outtrace those four-legged creatures.
What happened to the officer that had failed to do his job with the stick that didn't search the trash?
No longer working for this company.
Right, exactly. Got fired. You know, it's interesting because as you're talking about this, and I'll tell you how they did it in Utah, is you would have the trash truck that would come like every day or every other day, and a Charlie unit would follow him in within the fence line. And he would go behind every different housing unit and collect the trash. Before he left, he had to compact the trash. So if there's an inmate hiding in the dumpster, he's dead.
You're right. Unfortunately, we didn't have a compactor at the moment.
It's interesting to learn how different states and how they manage these different things.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's good to know as well.
So what made you decide to leave? Because you did how many years did you work for the department?
I think I can remember it was about 4 or 5 years I worked for the department. Yeah.
And so what made you decide to say, you know, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life?
Well, see, this is where I want people to listen up. Okay. That's why I really wanted this interview. I want them to, when they walk through that compound, to walk with a level head, not to be distracted by other inmates. Do not follow what other officers do, because that will lead to other problems. So what had happened, I ended up putting my hands on an inmate because he got mouthy with me. And I lost control. I busted his lip. He was sent to infirmary, and that's where they started asking questions. And the moment the inmate said, "Officer did this," it was the moment I was starting to get investigated. Before I allowed anything to happen, my dumbass decided to go ahead and resign, which just showed a complete false negligence on my part. Mm-hmm. It just did not look good for the department because I didn't finish the investigation that they had based off what information they had. And I was never able to get rehired on the department ever again.
Do you regret that?
I do, but I live my life now without regret. I think things happen for a reason. I needed to experience that. Although it did happen, it wasn't the right thing to do. And it happened because I wouldn't be here today sharing that story with you. So there could have been other scenarios that happened. I could have been, you know, still working as an officer, never ever meeting you with Butler Plus. You understand?
Absolutely. It seems like living a life free of regret is a very common theme. And Officer Johnny has come on the podcast multiple times. And that's something that we talk about all the time. But also, you know, being authentic and being real, which you obviously very much are, as you're talking very candidly to me today. You know, I look at the people that I worked shoulder to shoulder with through the years that put in 20, 25, 30 years. And all those people, Cisco, are they're all dying.
Yeah.
And it it breaks my heart. You got out of it, and maybe you look back and you say, I should have done this. But you look at the opportunities that have happened, and now you have a son. Correct. And your life has a new focus with your son. And I'm really glad that you are no longer in that business, because really destroys people. And I see these opportunities, and I see the things, the doors that are opening for you, and you're always smiling. And I think that if you'd continue to work there, I don't think you'd have the smile you do today.
Exactly. Ooh, I got chills because of that. I mean, I saw the time that I was there, I saw all the negativity, the draining of an officer, they were going, the divorce rate as an officer in a facility is crazy high. Mm-hmm. And that is because there is no life. It's really sucks the life out of you watching another human being caged up. Now, I don't know what's worse, the inmate being locked up or you watching the inmate locked up. Mm-hmm. You know, even though the only difference is that you get to leave after the 8-hour shift. We used to call it hit the gate at 8. I just saw like officers run down, overweight. That is a huge, huge thing. They were just so depressed. Every officer, you just see it in their face. And it was very sad.
Well, they say that food is the most abused drug.
Telling me? Sugar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is a crazy addiction.
I worked with a guy, really nice dude. He used to be just massive, huge. He used to love to lift heavy, heavy weight. He got cancer and he loved snacks, and cancer thrives off of refined sugar. And this guy would sit in a control point, and he had cancer, and he had just all these different Hostess cakes and snacks and processed foods. And it eventually took his life, but he worked control too.
Yeah, the diet of an officer in that type of facility, it's really not the best.
Oh, it's wicked.
And it's not the officer's fault. I believe it's the lack of education that our country doesn't provide when it comes to nutrition. Now that I am a health coach, and that's basically what I've been doing for the last 10 years of my life, been able to transform and help people and educate them through healthy habits, eating habits, creating that relationship with food. But yeah, officers, oftentimes they just a lot of bread, refined sugar, snacks, simple carbs that really don't do justice. There's not enough knowledge on what's a well-balanced meal. I mean, shit, inmates were eating better than most of the officers were. Food system in a correctional facility is far better than what our kids eat every day when they go to fucking school.
You know, we could go off on a whole new podcast episode on that, and I know you have a lot of knowledge about it.
Oh, man.
But I remember years ago seeing something about how things had changed and looking at, like, what is defined as a vegetable in the school system. And, like, on pizza, the tomato paste is considered a vegetable. And French fries are considered a vegetable. And I'm like, that's obscene.
What? Yeah. Sad. I mean, and that's what they're feeding. That's what they're feeding them. You know, pizza and burgers and nothing. The veggies doesn't look anything remotely delicious.
Sure.
So nobody wants to eat it.
It's creating habits that these children are going to carry for the rest of their life. And it's going to make them obese and everything else. It's really sad.
Absolutely. It is. It is. And it carries on through the rest of their life. And then when they go to a job of that demanding, you know, mentally demanding like that, people resort to food, comfort. Mm-hmm.
You have a great segue from working in corrections now to start to get out of corrections and into the next chapter of your life, because you had started to go into working for a gym, a corporate gym, was the next phase after.
I think everybody knows this one, LA Fitness.
Oh, yes.
Started out in California, and then it started to make its way over to the East Coast. I played a role in there. It was a sales and trainer position combined, where I was signing up potential clients for the trainers of LA Fitness.
Okay.
And that was the role that I had. And then they gave me my own facility over in Oviedo, which is in one of our towns here in Orlando. I ran that for a solid year. And after about 2.5 years, I met the director for the next role that I took part in as a housekeeping manager for Florida Hospital.
Interesting.
Totally different career field. I actually went to a prison setting, to a gym setting, to a hospital setting.
What was the incentive to make that jump from working in the gym to going to the hospital as a manager?
Oh, the pay was so much better.
Okay, that was it.
The gyms here, when you're working for a corporate, it's all sales driven. They really take away that love that you want to have in that line of work, because you want to help people.
Right.
You know, you really truly want to help people, but they take that away with numbers. All right. right, we need to hit quota. You're not hitting quota. We need quota. You're not you're working this weekend. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So I'm been blessed, thank God. You know, I was presented an opportunity at that time to meet with the director for this company called Crothall Services. They are a third-party company, one of the largest housekeeping producing company, like linen, trash, housekeeping, payroll department. They supply companies when others are in need of such. So for instance, Florida Hospital, they needed managers to come in and manage their housekeeping department. So all the housekeeper and staff were employees of Florida Hospital, but not the management's. The management was a whole nother company coming in to manage that part of the business.
That moves us to 2014, and you had another big career change.
So I'm going to back up just a little bit. So around that time when I was in the hospital, that's when I had my son. Now he's 13, big boy. Oh,
I've seen on social media, and it looks like he is like your best friend. Because you guys, the pictures of you guys, I don't know if it's staged or what, but you're always smiling. Both you and him.
Never staged. I built that relationship between us to flourish almost as a friendship. I didn't have that friendship with my dad. My dad was a little bit more stern with his demeanor and his personality because he was the oldest sibling in his family. His father died when he was just a teenager. Then he took the leading role of the dad of seven. So he was forfeited his youth at a very young age. Right after high school, he went right into the military. And it was because he knew he was able to support his mom and his brothers and sisters back home with that career. Again, military had, you know, him walking a straight line. And as a child growing up in the military setting, it's not easy depending on the character of that person and how they were brought up. My father never had a childhood. He was always busy working. He needed to work. Things weren't clean in the house. He would flip the house and make sure that shit gets clean the second time. And if it wasn't clean, something's going to happen. And we never let that happen because we knew what was going to happen. We didn't clean.
You learned consequences early.
I did, you know, and I felt like the reason why I didn't join the service was because I felt like I was in boot camp.
I've been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I didn't wake up in time for school, and here he comes, man. I slept past my alarm. He comes in without hesitation, pulls the entire mattress with me on it, flips it. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. Another time, you know, he comes in and checks all my clothing and my drawers, making sure everything was folded neatly. One drawer was a mess, everything comes out. And that was the lifestyle I was brought up. You know, I don't take that for granted. I appreciated all that because that made me who I am today. Because today I'm still folding all my shit.
Right. Do you have siblings, Cisco?
I do. I got an older brother and a younger sister.
Okay.
Yeah. Three.
I've got two brothers, two sisters. I'm the youngest of five. I was that extra glass of wine.
Nice. Well, I had it pretty easy. I was the middle child. So.
Okay.
Well, actually, my sister had it more easier than I did, that lucky brat. But anyway.
Right. Are we good to then move to 2014 with the next jump?
Yeah. Okay. Good. I just wanted to plug in my boy and make sure he gets a shout out.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah. So this is when you have your magic mic moment.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about that.
During those transition, I'm still young. I'm going through life not knowing what it is I want to do. Very unhappy with the decisions that I made because it never really stuck with me. The corrections, the gym setting, and the hospital setting. After I left the hospital setting, I was lost. I was like, well, what the fuck can I do? At that time, jobs were really starting to be adamant with, you know, looking for people to have backgrounds and education. You know, I never got to finish my education. And that's another thing that made it difficult. After that hospital setting, I started to DJ and just try to hustle my way through, trying to make a living, see how what I can do to make money. You know, I figure I like music and let me try to play. Most of my family played when they were young, in their prime. They had equipment, they had the turntables, and I figure, well, let me see if I have that gene. And that's where I went back to the gym where I got hired. And I said, hey, man, I see that you guys do like a thing once a month. Can I come out here and play music, whatnot? They're like, yeah, you can set up. And so I was cool. There I met a gentleman. He worked for a local production company, Hard Drive Production, and he was looking for a DJ. And I was so happened to be playing the moment he was looking. And he came up and was like, hey, I got a client. My colleague actually is hosting a party for her son and he's a DJ. Would you like to, you know, take this opportunity? I was like, sure. He said one statement, he was like, and you never know what may come after that. I said, sure, let's go do it. I was a little scared. My first DJ job, when I got there, played, and she was happy. They were all satisfied with the service and the performance. They then invited me to a charity event. It was called Headdress Ball. It's huge here in Florida. I don't know if they host it anymore. I know it was around that time, 2014, 15, 16, 17. Just up until COVID, I think it stopped, but it was very exclusive charity ball. People from all over, they would come dressed, suit, tie, dresses, gowns, very nice. This production company, Hard Drive, would put on majority of the production for this event, and they would hire local talents. I'm talking about mermaids in a fish tank, stilt walkers, aerialists, silk performers, you name it, they had it. And I was one of the male models that they wanted to have outlining their stage. And during that moment, we were basically eye candy. They wanted to hire a few hot guys. Luckily, I worked out. I took care of myself for the most part. That's when I met the owner of the Male Review Show, Rock Hard. I overheard two guys from the show. They were in the dressing room as we were putting on our costumes and all, and they were talking about the show. And I was like, you know, hey, what is this you guys are talking about? Male Review Show. You never heard of it? Rock Hard. I'm like, that's why I'm asking you, you know?
Sure.
Never heard of it. They said that the owner was, you know, he's right outside. If you want to talk to him, you introduce yourself. And so I did. I took that step, and the confidence took me to the next level where he invited me out to their first show that they were hosting that year in September. September 27th. Well, I can remember very clear because I do not forget my first experience. And it was quite an experience, man. I made $130 in cash, you know, okay. My first time. They just threw me to the wolves. You know, they didn't have me perform on stage or anything like that. But when we got out to the crowd, we were able to make tips. That's where I took advantage, took my shirt off. The owner saw it. The girls had a good reaction. So he later on was like, okay, man, I think, I'd like to maybe invite you back for an audition and let's get you caught up with some of the dance performances. And little by little, I'll teach you.
Did he just want to see you, how you interacted and how comfortable you were? Okay. I get it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And once he knew that you were comfortable.
It's not for everybody. Let me tell you. Sure. I've seen during the time that I've been there, I've seen guys come and go very, very quick. A lot of them, I understand where they're coming from when they invite their girlfriends, but that's really not what you want to do. Your first
right.
Your first time in is invite your girlfriend to a male review show housed with nothing but crazy, screaming, horny women looking at hot dudes.
Right?
Yeah. So, and those are the ones who don't come back to audition.
See, that's kind of a really good vetting process for talent.
It is a good way to vet other performers because we didn't want anybody. We wanted to develop a certain group of guys that really mesh well. We're in the green room, in the dressing room. We're getting changed. We're interchanging through performances. We're leaving cash right there, you know?
There's got to be a lot of trust.
we want to make sure that, hey, I can trust you. You know what
right,
I'm
exactly.
saying?
So, exactly.
Because at the end of the night, I know what I'm making, and that better not be short.
Sure.
And because we will be checking. And we actually have one, and we kicked his ass out just as quick. Like, get the fuck out.
He was a thief?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, sad. There's guys out there. Yeah, it is.
Now, is this called Hard Rock Live? Did I get that right?
Rock Hard Review. Everybody gets the name twisted okay. because of Hard Rock. Yeah.
Right. Rock Hard Review. Okay.
Yes.
So tell me some of the stories. I'm sure we could probably do a whole series of podcasts about you talking about the things that happened with the ladies that you met, because bachelorette parties and retirement parties. And
I had no experience whatsoever how to do or perform a bachelorette party. We got the call in. I was at rehearsal and the boss was like, hey, I need two guys to go to this bachelorette party. Simple party, not many people there, but they want two cowboys. I was like, all right, I guess we'll give it a shot. You know, he gave us kind of like a little rundown on what to kind of expect, but you never know what to expect when you're going to someone's house, you know? So we get there, me and my other dance partner, we get in, we talk to the girl who initially booked us to run through, you know, what it is that we plan on doing, just so that there's no surprises. She didn't tell us how uncomfortable or insecure that her bride would be by us entering. And we literally scared the shit out of this girl.
Now, why?
It was bad. We didn't do anything wrong. We came in, we were that she wanted cowboys. We were dressed in our cowboy hat, flannel shirt, boots, and jeans. We did a cowboy like routine just to kind of like ease the girl in the chair.
Was it the size of the lasso? I mean, because some girls get a little gun shy.
In my experiences, there's just girls who think that they're comfortable with it, but when we're there, they find out that they're not comfortable. Really? And that was the case. Yeah, and that was the case with my very first experience with that. So it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, but I didn't let that stop me. I kept going, man. I kept going. And what I mean by that is I kept taking on other bachelorette parties.
Sure.
I wanted to develop that experience, that confidence within me.
The Rock Hard Review is not just an event like where ladies come to a particular venue and you guys come out and dance. It also does like custom parties and events. You get hired, or because I'm thinking like when I had seen the picture, I was thinking it was kind of like a Chippendales sort of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Okay, but then you also go and you do private parties and events.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, because these are women who may have seen the show, mm-hmm. and later down the road, they're like, oh, wait, I remember going to the show. Let me see if I can contact the show and see if any of the guys are available to do that, or even if they do that. And yeah, we would do that on the side from our show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so how long did you do the Rock Hard Review?
About 8.5 years.
The reason that I met you is because this past October, I had a Halloween party. And I don't know what you know about what you were told or like how you get contact and say, hey, there's this guy and he lives in Central Florida and he has this Halloween party and he needs a male and a female performer to come. And you guys are to dress up as cops, basically answering on a noise complaint. Is what I had tried to pitch it to him. And then I was told, you know, I pay him a fee. And then he's like, okay, the talent will contact you when they arrive. Make sure you have your cell phone. You know, you guys can work out the details at that time. So what were you told about this party of mine?
That was just it. It comes in a text format and it's very descriptive. The time, the location, the type of party, how many guests, the host's phone number, name, the contact.
Okay.
If there was anything specific, like what you mentioned, if there's like some type of scenario that you want us to, you know, portray. He will then relay that to us. Hey, yeah, this client, he or she requested that you pretend there was a noise complaint. or somebody somebody's car needs is getting towed or something like that, you know. Sure. But that's usually how we are communicating on that end.
It's interesting. Now, what was your perception of the event that I had? Because I'd never met you. So you come in and so you see this house full of movie props, costume, and this guy has a lot of mannequins.
That was pretty cool.
It's like, this guy's a fucking freak.
What movie am I in? At one point, it was like a Jason and then Freddy.
Hey, right. And so what was that like for you? Because I know that you've done a lot of events over the years. Was my house like any other house that you'd been in?
No, I mean, I've seen a lot of different houses. I've seen mansions and I've seen trailer homes, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always unique. I'm never disappointed.
Sure.
Because if I go with expectations and if something turns out that it doesn't exceed my expectations, I'm going to be disappointed.
Okay.
So I leave that. And leave that behind. Sure. And I just go in an open mind. And sure enough, and when I got there, I was just like, this is freaking cool. He's got to be part of a movie or work behind the scenes or something.
He's got to be a psychopath or a retired corrections officer. Did you get a chance to get some food and get a drink and stuff, I hope?
I got a drink. There was a lot of people by the bar, so I was only able to get one drink. I didn't stay too long just for the fact that I had another party. I actually came from another party before your event. So I played a totally different role in that one. I was this was a birthday party hosted for a friend, a girlfriend of the host. And it was a co-ed party and they hired a party bus. It was pretty cool.
Very cool
little setup. Yeah. So they hired me to partake in the party bus. So I went ahead and I said, listen, stripping doesn't really work in a party bus when it's moving. So can I present you another offer, another option? And this may seem very surprising for both because she's not going to expect either one. However, she still is going to enjoy the hot guy being there in her party bus. So I presented her, which is my new business now, Butler Plus. There I was able to host, serve them their drinks in the party bus, play music. I was playing my Spotify. So I had an awesome playlist. They were dancing. I was dancing with the birthday girl, serving them drinks in between, just really catering to her and her guests, making sure that, you know, they have a pretty fun, entertaining ride from the moment we got in to their destination. It was a quick 45-minute ride over to Daytona Beach where they had dinner. And then from there, I ordered myself, well, they helped me and ordered an Uber to take over to your location.
Very cool.
And then that's where I had to just flip my hat and become
fun.
The stripper now. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. I had told the person that I had originally booked your service through that, like, mm-hmm. you know, once everything's done, if they want to hang out, clearly, you know, they're more than welcome to. There's plenty of food and plenty of drinks. And so, again, to segue into this next venture, you had told me, you had said, hey, Mark, I got this thing going on that could really help you with your party. And one thing I noticed is that you don't have somebody to help you out with this large of an event. And you had started to talk about Butler Plus, this new service that you are now offering, this new business. And I'm intrigued. And so for the next Halloween party, you are going to help me out and help things run a lot smoother. And I'm excited about it. But you're going to help as far as the prep time and the getting people in, and because you'll be arriving an hour before the actual party. And I don't want to give away too much for the people that'll be coming to the party. Well, they're going to listen.
Right.
But the next party I will tell people is the people of Walmart is the theme, and Cisco's excited, and everybody I've told about it is very excited. What exactly does Butler Plus do for people that might be interested in your service, Cisco?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for bringing this up, man, because this is going to help me out tremendously. So with my years of entertainment in the entertainment business, I've come on to finding myself helping the hosts of a bachelorette party or some type of birthday or whatever the special occasion is, helping them and directing them, whether if they need a special talent, if they are looking for other entertainment, whether if it's a DJ company or a stilt walker or even another stripper, female or male. So I decided to bring that together. So I consider myself as an event specialist now with Butler Plus, because I want to be able to help cater and provide that level of service to where the client doesn't have to stress on the amount of work that takes to put together a special event. I want to be able to supply a bartender, but I don't want to just supply any bartender. I want to be able to supply a good-looking bartender, whether if it's a female or male. I really want to dive into that adult side of entertainment still, because that's my background. I love sex. I like what I do because it's sexy. I like the sex appeal. I like things that are erotic, exotic. And I think a lot of that really sells when, let's say, a bachelor party wants, you know, a good looking girl for their party. Maybe I can supply them. Your soon to be wife may not want a stripper. Would you consider maybe a good looking, fit, good looking girl for your liquor? Maybe serving you guys cocktails, you know, maybe a little tease here and there, but nothing to the point where she's stripping entirely. So I really want to dive into something a little bit unique and different, but also help with the supply of entertainment with Butler Plus.
Very, very cool. And I'm looking forward to working with you on the next Halloween party. And we've already talked about the other person that is very unique that you'll be bringing with you.
Yeah.
And I loved, of course, I had already told you, Cisco, like I had saw your advertisement on your Instagram, and I'll have to connect your social media to the Gay Florida Man podcast so people can look at your service, because the video that you did for that Christmas party, man, you did a phenomenal job.
Thanks, man. All the content that you see, believe it or not, I do it myself. That's something that I picked up that I didn't know I had during my career as an entertainer, because I was involved a lot to do with the marketing side of, you know, pushing the show, announcing our show is, you know, coming up on this date, you know. So I felt like I was doing that already. Everything that I've done during my time as an entertainer, I've just been applying it to my own self, growing my own business, applying it to my social media outlets through my content, editing my videos, my pictures as much as possible, making it something quite unique. Other people pay people to do that stuff. You know, I do it myself. I tried paying somebody to create my vlog series. I had that going. I had to let them go just because, you know, I felt like they weren't fulfilling my needs and what my vision and what I wanted to portray in my vlog series. So I, you know, I stopped it after, I think, episode 9, 10, and then everything else after that, I just been doing on my own, creating my own, continuing my own vlog series, putting, you know, content as much as possible. Content, content, content.
We live in a different world than we did 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. The world is evolving. And I heard a quote one time, and somebody had said that the world that we go to sleep to tonight is different than the world we wake up tomorrow.
Evolving. That's how fast we're evolving. Yep, exactly. Evolving.
And it's social media and computers. It is crazy. Is there anything that I've missed or any story that you need to tell that I haven't touched on in our episode today, Cisco?
No, I would just like to say maybe just something about health and wellness, because I am a health coach, and I, you know, I like to just put it out there for anybody who is struggling or may find themselves struggling with their weight. Maybe they're just not getting the right information, or if they are getting way too much information and the information, they don't know what to do with that information, to please reach out to me. I'll give you my Instagram handle on that. I run multiple pages. I got pages for Butler Plus. I got a page for my fitness. And I also got a page for my newfound new career that I just picked up. So I'm making also these mala necklaces, energy necklaces, and energy bracelets. that I use pure energy stones. So through my journey, I found a new light through my path, and it's been quite a journey, I gotta say. Helping people, whether if it was through my entertainment career to my fitness, I found that there's a sense of joy, peace, my purpose. These things helped me a lot through a lot of it. So I decided to just start to create my own masterpieces.
Awesome. So how do people find you? What is your handle? How do they search for you? Please tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. So my fitness page on Instagram is totalvibefitness.cpro. And everything there, it's gauged on fitness. I try to share and promote. I've had multiple in the past. Of course, they were hacked due to hackers. So some of these were having to start all over, but I didn't care. But that's my fitness page for that. My Butler Plus is butler.plus on Instagram. And then on each of those handles, there's a link on my bio, and I have websites set up that goes a little bit more in depth into that particular entity, what it is that I do, whether it's a business, my fitness business, or my Butler Plus business.
Do you have any time left in the day?
Yeah.
I use that
to create. Yeah. I get hit and orders for necklaces and bracelets. And I do that relaxing with my girlfriend, and we have a nice little setup, and we kind of just, you know, have that peace and time for ourselves. And it's very powerful when you handle these stones. It kind of puts you in that state of mind of relaxation. So that's where I get to relax. I work out. So that's another place where I exert my energy and have my own peace and my own time, you know?
I've seen some of your fitness stuff, and you stay very active and very fit.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
And I know you eat right because of what you said in today's podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes hand in hand because of, back again with my entertainment career, I needed to look a certain way. I just wanted to present myself in a certain light. And by doing that, I needed to really hone in on my diet and my exercise. That gave me the opportunity to do that because of the flexibility that I was given. You know, I was able to perform, go work out. You know, that became a living. I was like, well, shit, let me put two and two together and make this a business.
You know, we had talked earlier about the politics of working in a prison, and the politics bit me in the ass multiple times. And
oh, boy.
One of the things that I always enjoy doing, and I go back to like sixth or seventh grade when I got my first camera, and it was an 8mm movie camera, and I was fascinated with movies, and I always have been. And I begged my parents, and they're like, you're going to use that for a week, and it's going to go in the closet. Like, I had to talk them into letting me get an 8mm movie camera. And so they did it. And they didn't realize that it was a major, major fire starting, because it progressed to video, and then it never went away. And then I got a professional camera when I worked for the department, and we started doing YouTube videos. A lot of them were very inappropriate and walked that fine line. If you're a corrections officer, you cannot be joking about these things. But I still did it, and it got me in trouble with the department, and they tried to come after me. You know, all those videos that we did are available on YouTube under the Gay Florida Man Podcast YouTube page. And I have not really talked a lot about this, I don't think, up to this point in the podcast. But this past week, I've got a brand new professional Panasonic camera. I've got the light set, wireless mics, and then finally a rig for moving shots with, you know, like a glide cam, vest, and arm. So I'm going to get back into video production. So with all this new equipment, you can be looking forward to some more things on YouTube from the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This has been Cisco Perez, from Corrections Officer to Butler Plus. I'm going to end today's podcast by telling you the same thing I tell you every week, and that is to be good. And if you can't be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody.